City Talk 105.9. Official podcasts. Online at citytalk.fm.
This is Talk to Trisha on City Talk 105.9.
All of us dread that unexpected phone call or knock on the door that brings bad news about someone close. For Michelle Compton, that dread became a reality on August the 1st, 2006. Michelle's fiancé, Martin, who was serving as a soldier in Afghanistan, had been seriously wounded by a Taliban bomb. The armoured car he was travelling in was hit by a rocket-propelled grenade, which killed his three comrades and left him with horrific injuries. It was only the courage of another soldier who risked his own life to drag Martin's charred body from the line of fire that meant he survived at all. But Michelle's relief that Martin was alive didn't diminish the shock she felt when she came face to face with him in a hospital. The 80% burns that he'd received meant that he'd lost his ears, his nose, and that his eyelids were fused inside out. The only parts of his body, in fact, that had escaped damage were his legs below the knee. Doctors were unsure whether he'd pull through, and his condition was so very grave he was placed in a medically induced coma for 3 months. Now, once she'd begun to come to terms with what had happened, Michelle began to channel all her energies into Martin's recovery. She kept a constant vigil by his bedside. She was reading to him, playing him their favourite songs, and sharing her plans for the wedding she was determined would still go ahead. Well, when Martin regained consciousness and told Michelle he would understand if she changed her mind, she was adamant he was still the man she loved and would go on loving. Well, last summer, Martin was sufficiently recovered for the wedding to go ahead and they got married. And I am delighted to say that both of them join me now. So welcome, Mr. and Mrs.
Thank you.
Michelle, can I start with you? Can we go back to the very beginning of your relationship with Martin? And Martin, feel free to chip in if she gets any of the details wrong. Okay. How did you meet? Who chatted up who?
We met in a local pub that I used to work in part-time.
Yeah.
And basically, I knew Martin's dad for about 4 or 5 years before I actually met Martin.
Right.
And I went up the pub, just as I used to do on a Friday, to see my friend Sarah, who was working there, and walked in, and Martin's dad was sitting there, and I said hello to him. And then I said to Sarah, as I walked around the bar, I said, oh, who's that with Rob? And she said, oh, that's Martin, his son. I said, oh, right. And just didn't think anything more of it. And then a bit later on in the evening, Rob obviously started talking to me, and then obviously Martin did as well, and we just got on from there, really.
And is that how you remember it, Martin?
Yeah, pretty much. I was talking to my dad, and yeah, he started speaking to Michelle, and then, yeah, I just sort of butted in, I suppose, and started chatting away as well. Like.
Chatting up?
Yeah, well, not really. Just talking to her, but it's just so easy to get on.
But how did you feel, coming back to you, Michelle, how did you feel, I should ask you, how long were you together before you found out that he was being posted to Afghanistan?
I think we were together a couple of months, was it?
Yeah.
So that's very early on.
Yes.
And how did you feel? How did you feel?
Well, obviously I was a bit shocked and, you know, a bit upset, really, that he was going to be going away for 4 months. But as I said to him, there's nothing we could do. We just had to get on with it. It was his job, you know. We had to live with it.
So were you dating? Were you doing the popcorn and the crisps at the movies then? Or was it really, were you quite intense at that stage?
I think we were intense at that stage, weren't we?
Yeah, I suppose.
It started off quite slowly, but yeah, then it definitely got a lot more intense. So yeah.
And how long had Martin been out in Afghanistan until that, as I said in the introduction, that dreaded knock on the door came?
6 weeks, I think it was.
Gosh, so this all happened really quickly, didn't it?
It did, yeah.
So before then, had you been in contact with each other while Martin was out in Afghanistan?
Oh. Yeah, Martin tried to contact me, obviously, as much as he could. And I'd at least get, definitely a phone call at least a week. And then here we'd send each other blueies and e-blueies and parcels and things. So
yeah.
We did stay in contact, yeah.
And Martin, when you were right at the beginning, when you were sending messages back to Michelle, did you filter out what you were telling her? Were you sort of thinking, oh, I can't tell her the whole story, or did you just tell her the whole thing, warts and all?
No, obviously there's things when you're out there that you can't tell people back home, and she knew that. I told her that before I went, so
yeah,
it was just literally catching up and making sure I was all right and that she was all right, things like that.
And then, as I said before, the knock on the door. Can you tell us about hearing that news, Michelle?
Well, at the time it was a Tuesday, and I was having my hair cut, and my phone rang, my mobile, and I wouldn't usually answer my phone, but it was Bob, and I thought, well, something was telling me to answer my phone, really, because otherwise I just would have ignored it, whoever it was. And so the hairdresser let me answer my phone, and it was Rob telling me that, obviously, Martin had been seriously injured in Afghanistan. Army welfare would be round at his house at about, I think it was about 4 o'clock, and obviously to be there. And
so you didn't know what the injuries were at that time? It was just seriously injured?
Yeah, just seriously injured. Didn't know anything. So obviously runs through your mind is, well, what ran through my mind was, how badly was he injured? Had he lost a limb? Anything like that. Burns never crossed my mind. I never thought about burns at all.
No. Did you think sod the haircut?
No, I actually turned around to my friend Ella and she said, because I obviously looked shocked when I put the phone down, and she said, go, after I explained to her. And I said, no, you may as well just carry on doing my hair because, I don't need to be there till 4 o'clock. And I think it was just a case of shock, really.
Yeah. And when you were there, when they came round, what did they tell you and Martin's dad?
Again, they said he was very seriously injured and they didn't know to what extent, but they did know that he had suffered burns.
And when you heard burns, how did that affect you?
Sorry?
When you heard burns, what were you thinking? Because still you don't get a good picture of what they're talking about, do you?
No, I mean, I had no idea. All I could think about was when I was going to see Martin next. That was my first words. I turned around to them and I said, when am I going to see him? When is he going to be flown back? And they said, well, as soon as he's stable. And as they were saying that to me, one of the phones rang and they answered it. And the gentleman that was there started putting his thumbs up to me. And I thought, well, obviously something's good, and put the phone down. And he said, oh, he's being flown into the UK as we speak. He'll arrive tomorrow, meaning the Wednesday. So
it was a
turnaround.
Yeah, and that's you've hardly got time to take in the news, and he's arriving. So how soon after him arriving back in the UK did you see him?
Oh, I think he arrived back at probably about 7 in the evening, I think it was, and we saw him at 11 in the evening.
And tell me about that first time, Michelle, when you walked into the hospital and saw Martin.
Obviously, when I first saw Martin, I couldn't obviously see much of him because he was covered head to toe in bandages. And
was that a shock?
I don't know, to be honest. When I think about it, I don't really know how I felt at the time. I think it was quite a big shock.
Yeah.
I could still see that it was Martin. Due to his lips that I could see, and I just thought, oh, it's definitely Martin, it's his mouth. Covered head to toe in bandages, twice his size that he was before he was injured.
Really? You worked from swelling?
It's from all the fluid that they were pumping into him.
Gosh.
And I could just see the bottom bit of his nose, and it was kind of like charcoaled black, I suppose, and it was just, then when I saw that little bit, you just think to yourself, yeah, you do know, this is going to be bad.
Did you cry? Did you just think, I mustn't make any, what do you do?
Well, first of all, I did shed a few tears in his room. We didn't stay there for long because obviously he'd just got there and they wanted him settled for the night and everything. So as soon as we walked out of the hospital, that was when I just burst into tears. And I got on the phone to my mum at midnight and said, Mum, I need you. Can you come and see me? So she said, yep, me and your dad will be there. So they drove all the way from Kent to Essex, which is probably, I don't know if it's about an hour and a half.
Yeah, in the middle of the night, yeah.
And they drove up and I saw Mum and I cried again. And then after about 20 minutes, I was fine. And I said to her, you can go now. I've driven all this way. And I said, well, yeah. I said, I just needed to see you and I needed you to be there. I said, and you've done that. I said, but I'm fine now. And she was very reluctant to leave me, but she did in the end.
She probably knows you, doesn't she?
Yeah, exactly. And from that point, I just said, you know, that I was going to be strong for Martin.
Well, let me just remind our viewers, I'm talking to Martin and Michelle Compton at the moment. Of course, I'm talking to Michelle here on Talk to Tricia, City Talk 105.9, about Michelle first seeing Martin's injuries. When did they actually tell you what those injuries were?
Well, when we got to the hospital, because they take you into a little room and things, and you think, oh, blimey, you know what's going to happen here. And they said to us that Martin had 75% third-degree burn, and they explained exactly what that meant, and obviously that there was a good chance that he wouldn't pull through the night.
So how do you get through the night?
With difficulty.
Yeah.
Put it that way. I didn't sleep very much at all. Rob Martin's dad, I don't think, did either, and literally kept phoning the hospital just to, I suppose, every hour or two to check that Martin was okay, you know. So
was there a part of you saying, did it really happen? Did it really happen?
Yeah, I think there was, you know, and like I say, it's a lot of shock, and thinking back to it now, I don't know, sometimes I have to think really hard to, you know, what I actually did feel like, because...
Yeah, I think because the mind actually sort of protects you, doesn't it?
Yeah, definitely.
You don't want to go back there. But I'm guessing nothing could have prepared you for having to care for someone with such horrendous injuries and at such a young age. So how did you learn what might help Martin's recovery and how to be with him? How did you know what to do?
Basically, from the hospital, because obviously they were a specialist burns unit where he was. They just, obviously, when he was starting to get better, the physios and people came in and they said, you know, Martin's skin will have to be massaged with cream and you'll need to rub it in. This is to supple up his skin and everything, they said. And
was that ever hard to do? Because somebody with burns is a difficult sight, and somebody you love, and if they're in pain, or maybe Martin was on pain medication, I don't know, but... To override those feelings first of maybe revulsion of, oh, can I do this? Was that difficult?
Yeah, it was in a way. I mean, I used to think, you know, I used to say and I used to question and query myself as to if I was doing it right. And obviously there was always a physio there with me and they were saying, yeah, that's fine. And when Martin slowly started coming round and obviously things hurting, he could actually say. And the physios used to say, you know, if it does hurt, don't do it sort of thing. So
yeah.
It was hard. But I mean, like, when the first time I brushed his teeth, I remember doing that when he was obviously still sedated.
Yeah.
They keep his mouth clean and they said, oh, you can brush his teeth. So I brushed his teeth with a child's toothbrush, it was, and toothpaste.
Yeah.
And I remember his lips bleeding and I was like, you know, I'm making him bleed. And they said, that's okay, his lips are sensitive, but they said, you know, you need to clean his mouth and his teeth so he doesn't get an infection. They said, his lips will be fine, we'll just clear him up afterwards. So, yeah, it took a lot of getting used to.
Now, much has been made, and quite rightly so, in the media about your devotion to Martin and your decision to stand by him, where maybe other people might have run a mile. But how did you manage to stay strong for him? Did you ever have any doubts about sticking together? Was there ever a point when you thought, well, I'll wait till this is over and then I'm off?
No, the only ever doubt I had was if he woke up and he totally changed in himself, if his personality wasn't the same. And I actually said that to Martin when, like, he'd come round and he was with it. And I said to him, you know, because he turned round to me and actually said, you know, you don't have to be with me. And I said to him, you know, I fell in love with you and I want to be with you as the person you are, but if you do ever change, then I'll be walking away. And
whoa.
And I think that helped Martin as well.
Yeah, so, yeah. Did it, Martin?
Yeah, definitely. It sort of kicked me up the backside, I suppose, and got me motivated and that.
But let's ask you some questions now. Did you always want to be in the army? Did you always want to be a soldier?
I'm not sure, to be honest. It's sort of happened accidentally in a way. I was getting in trouble as a kid and that, and just used to mess around at school and thought I need to do something with my life, and that was that. Joined the army, sorted myself out.
Now, how did you feel when you found out you were going to fight in Afghanistan?
I'm not sure really, but at the time I knew the dangers that were out there, and it's just one of those things that you have to get on with, I suppose.
Yeah. I was going to ask you, what was life like day to day in a war zone? Was there a lot of boredom, or was it, it's difficult to imagine it, I guess, for people in Civvy Street. You think of Ross Kemp. I that's the closest I've seen, I guess.
You never get bored. I don't think you get time to be bored. It's pretty constant, and every day is different. So it's quite hard to explain, really.
Do you live on your with a lot of adrenaline pumping through you quite a lot of the time?
Yeah, most of the time, I think.
Yeah. You wouldn't exactly be able to relax a lot, would you?
No.
So can you remember what happened on that day in August 2006?
Yeah, I remember the whole incident.
Can you tell us what happened?
Yeah, basically we was out on a normal patrol. In each troop we've got four wagons.
Right.
I was the second wagon going in this patrol that we was doing. And as we got to Misakala, which is a little village, we was going through the village, and quite a derelict sort of area. And as we went through, the front wagon got ambushed, and as it went over the radio, bullets were coming down onto the front decks of our wagon. We reversed out of the ambush as quick as we could, and as I'd done that, they'd set up an improvised explosive device across the road, which blew the wagon up, and unfortunately killing the three lads that were in the back. And obviously, at the time, I couldn't go anywhere.
So when you say exploded, I know this is going to sound like a really dumb question, Martin, but what does an explosion feel like? Somebody explained once it's like having all the air sucked out of out for a second.
Yeah. Well, obviously, I was in the wagon, so it was just a hell of a shudder, and it shot me forward. And bearing in mind, I'm going backwards in a small...
Yeah.
And it shot me forward, so it was head of a four sort of thing. But
and somebody dragged you out?
No. At this point, they shot RPGs at me, which is a rocket grenade.
Right.
And then that blew the engine up, which engulfed me in flames.
Oh, God.
And I managed to climb out and obviously get out of all the wreckage. And as I was putting myself out and running into cover, they shot me in the leg as well.
So could you feel, sounds like a mad question, but could you feel the burns, or were you just so on survival instinct, you just did what you had to do?
A bit of both, really. It was initially, obviously, the pain was so intense, it was over in seconds, and when I got shot in the leg, I didn't feel it. It just sort of went off to one side, and that was that.
And so when did you first become aware of what actually had happened to you, what injuries you had?
Well, obviously, when they got me out of the site of where I just got injured, they lost me, and I actually died twice.
Oh gosh!
And my body sort of closed down, and I went into a coma for 3 months.
So you don't remember? There's a whole 3 month gap in your life.
Yeah, and then the hospital slowly brought me round over a month and a half, and obviously at this point I was. They were sort of telling me things of what happened and that. So by the time I was aware of it all, I sort of knew about it, but didn't in a way.
Was there ever any grief or anger or oh my God, how do I go on? Did you go through any of that?
Not grief or anything, but sort of saying to myself, how do I get on with this? And that is when I said to Michelle, Do you really want to be with me in that?
What were you hoping she said?
Well, obviously, yeah.
but were you prepared for her to say, listen, I'm glad you asked, I'm on my bike?
I don't know, to be honest. It's just one of those questions that came into my head at the time, and I thought I've got to ask her.
And did it have an effect on you when she said, no, I'm hanging around?
Yeah, definitely. It got me more motivated, and I just had to get to the wedding day, and that was that. So
is that one of the things that sustained you through your recovery, focusing on the wedding day, or Michelle's next visit, I'm guessing, things like that.
Yeah, definitely, yeah. It's just one of those things where I had to, because obviously I was in bed and couldn't move and couldn't walk, so I had to get out and get onto my feet and get walking again, so.
Yeah. Now, in your book, there's a picture of you with Simon Weston, and, you know, the one thing that is, you know, we grow up with our faces and who we are and what we look like. You know, we kind of see ourselves in reflection, oh, yeah, that's me.
Yeah.
What was it like the first time you looked in the mirror?
It was really hard. It took a long time, and I had to be forced into looking in the mirror. The physio said, like, you can't go out and about in case you see yourself in a window or reflection of yourself or whatever. So the first day it was horrible, like, really, it was emotional, and
yeah,
it was just being Michelle there, and it was just really hard.
And Michelle, when you love somebody, you just want to protect them, don't you? And
yeah, definitely.
Could you see what was happening, you know, when Martin was even saying, no, I don't want to look in the mirror, and then finally did? Could you see how he felt?
Oh, yeah, definitely. Obviously, you could see that he was really upset, kind of like devastated, I suppose. But then I think he just learnt to obviously live with it. And like he says, you know, at the end of the day, that's what he looks like now. There's nothing he can do about it to change it.
But did it take you a while, Martin, to come to that conclusion? And I'm guessing people like meeting Simon Weston helped you.
Yeah, definitely. It took me a little while, but like I said, Michelle sort of told me if I don't change, then that was that, and I just sort of got on with it, really, and sort of.
Yes, I'm guessing if you feel secure that somebody loves you no matter what, it's not as bad, is it? Well, it's always going to be bad if you get what I mean, but if you know that person's not just going to take off.
Exactly.
Now, I'm interested in when you made the decision to fight for compensation for your injuries. What's happened with that? How far has that got?
Well, basically, a friend of mine who was an ex-officer in the House of Cavalry, Alistair Galloway, he found out what I'd got, because at the time he was an officer. He was the second in charge of our squadron.
Right.
And basically, we decided that wasn't right, and went to solicitors and lawyers and friends of his that worked for Lovell's lawyers in London. They decided to fight, and that was that, really. It just went from there.
Because it's interesting, I was reading Lance Corporal Johnson Behari and what, you know, what he was saying about the same thing, that as well, people tend to focus on the external, what they can see.
Yeah.
But how do you deal with the inside stuff? Do you relive that day in August? Do you have flashbacks? Has there been anything going on inside you that people wouldn't even know about?
There is that sort of thing that goes on in my head, but obviously that at Headley Court, which is the army rehab place,
right,
there's a lot of counsellors that can help you with those sort of things. So,
and have you used those? Have you been to talk through things with the counsellors?
Yeah, I've used them, and I think the biggest thing that's helped me is family and Michelle and friends. Yeah. And
do you think it's because they just let you be you?
Sorry?
Do you think it's because they just let you be you?
Yeah, definitely.
Good day, bad day, who gives a damn, sort of thing.
Yeah, exactly, yeah. Yeah, no, I haven't changed as a person. It's just, I just look a bit different.
But you're now a spokesperson, aren't you, for injured service people. So what do you think of the issues are affecting people who've been, you know, who've gone out of the services with injuries? Because you're still having rehab, physio, so life must be, that must be a central part to your life. But what do you think the issues are?
The issues for everyone else are, well, obviously the compensation's changed, so it helps people that obviously they get injured and they need that support when they've been injured. And I think the government needs to put a lot of money into some physio and to things like that to help people.
More money than they're doing the paltry amount they're putting in at the moment.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. This small things like beds and more help there. Obviously the physios can only do so much, and they do amazing things. So,
And it sounds like they really helped you as well, Michelle. It sounds like not just from the practical side of helping Martin, but were they a great support, the staff there for you?
Oh, yeah, definitely. Yeah, from day one, they were a great support. I mean, even at Headley Court, you know, when Martin was first there, and they said to me, you know, come round, come for a day, watch Martin, see how, you know, what we do with him and everything. And as I said to Martin, when I did actually go there, when you get to Headley Court, it opens your eyes to a lot, because obviously you hear about people on the news who die, but you don't hear about the injured soldiers.
No, you don't.
And it's absolutely amazing, the work they do at Headley Court, and the morale of soldiers and Navy men, is it all three? RAF people, is just incredible.
What, good morale, you mean? They're...
Yeah, definitely. You know, you've got people that have lost both legs, you know, arms, whatever, and the morale is just so good. They're so upbeat and, you know, wanting to do things and to get back to normal life.
So you're not going to go there whinging about a headache?
No, exactly.
And finally, the big wedding day that you'd been working for, I'm sure the whole day was amazing, but any particular moments for you on that day, Michelle, that you will never, ever, ever forget?
I don't know, really.
Wedding night?
Yeah, I suppose just seeing Martin, obviously, standing there when I was walking down the aisle was amazing. And for him to actually stand the whole way through, because we weren't sure how long he'd be able to stand for, and then walking me back down, it was just overwhelming and just such an emotional day for everyone, I think.
And Martin, what was your high point? Was that the same for you?
Yeah, I think that was my goal, and from being in hospital to Headley Court, and I'd made that goal true, like, so it's just surreal, I suppose.
Yeah, and I guess it showed you what you can do.
Yeah, definitely. If you push yourself and people around you love you, and you just say, oh, well, I was so determined to get on, and that's what I've done, so...
Now, what amazes me talking to both of you, I mean, you've both obviously got a really positive can-do attitude, which I suspect you always had at the beginning. But a lot of people would be, and I know, because I've met them on my show when we've done shows with ex-service people, are consumed with anger. And yet you don't sound like you have been sort of taken over by anger. How come?
I think, to be honest, I lost three lads that day and they was all in my wagon. So I just feel, in a way, lucky that I'm still here, so... And I just, now I'm here, I just spend every day as a special one, I suppose.
Yeah, yeah. And you're here for a reason. What about you, Michelle? How come you're not spitting chips and angry all the time?
Well, as I said to Martin before he went out, you know, it's his job. We know what it entails. And if something happens, something happens. You know, there's absolutely nothing we can do about it. As much as, you know, we might hate it and, you know, we don't like it at all, anyone going out there, they have to do it, you know, they can't turn around and say no. And I just think, it's, you know, it's just part of the job, and if something happens, something happens. And luckily with Martin, obviously he was the fortunate one who survived, you know. I don't know what I would have been like, obviously, if he'd have died, but I can't comment on that. So.
No, you don't even have to think about that. So
exactly.
What's next? Because you guys sound like you'd made excellent parents. She said. You'd have some fantastic gifts to pass on to kids: resilience, toughness, sense of humour. Some children, is that next?
Definitely, Martin? Yeah. Well, we hope. See, obviously, what happens in time, and we just want to live a happy, normal life as we would have done.
Martin, same for you?
Yeah, definitely. Can't wait.
If you had a little boy and he said, I wanted to go into the army, what would you say?
Probably wouldn't let him, to be honest.
You wouldn't?
No.
Not nowadays. No, stay home with Dad. Let me tell people about the book. It's been fantastic talking to both of you, Martin and Michelle. Thank you so, so much for joining me this evening.
Thank you.
The book's called Home from War. It's by Martin and Michelle Compton, who I've just been speaking to, and it's published by Mainstream Books, and it is out now. And I think it's... It would be great to read such a positive story. Isn't it nice hearing something positive and reading about somebody who's literally been to hell and back, and how love wins through? Oh, I'm soppy, I'm a romantic. But quite obviously, you've got two very strong people there, and I think we can learn a lot from them. You've been listening to Talk to Tricia. Thank you for joining me this week when, once again, we've met some amazing people. I look forward to having your company same time next Sunday, 8 o'clock. Until then, bye-bye.
Listen, and log on to the Voice of Liverpool. City Talk 105.9.